You're listening to the Career Jump Podcast. Insights, interviews, and success stories to inspire and give you the edge when you make your next career jump. Hosted by your career concierge, Andrew McCaskill.
Hello, welcome back to the Executive Career Jump Podcast. I'm your host and career concierge, Andrew McCaskill. I'm really excited today to be joined by Tak Shah. How are you doing, Tak?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
No, always good to take LinkedIn relationships onto podcasts. So thanks so much for choosing to join me. For the people that haven't interacted with you before, can you tell us a little bit more about who you are and the type of work you get involved with, please?
Yeah, so my name's Tak Dees. Most people, anybody and everybody call me Tak. So I am a recruitment strategist by business. I have got about five years experience in recruitment. I've done a mixed bag of agency recruitment and internal recruitment. I've actually got a massive long history before I went into recruitment in legal. So I went to, you know, uni and law school and did all of that, worked in the legal industry for about 8 years, fell out of love with it, which is kind of how I got into recruitment, which was a total fluke. There was no rhyme or reason behind why I went from one to the other. But so, yeah, I loved working with people and I enjoyed the people aspect, the human aspect of recruitment, but I didn't quite enjoy the agency side. So I went into internal recruitment, loved it, was working with a tech company for about 3 years, just under 3 years. And then because of, you know, COVID and all of that, I was furloughed pretty quickly, pretty much into lockdown. Enjoyed the sunshine for a little while, got bored very quickly, started applying for other jobs and couldn't quite find what I was looking for. So I went into, the idea just literally came to me one day, like, just make the job up. If you can't find the job you're looking for, just make it up and start your own business. And that's pretty much what I did. So I now go into businesses and help them change the way that they hire. So you may see from the content that I put out and stuff like that, I'm not necessarily hands-on recruitment. That is one of the services that I offer, just like freelance recruitment. But the main crux of what I do is going into businesses and helping them re-strategize, reframing the way that they hire, the way that they attract, hire, retain their people. So the entire function of recruitment just completely picking up the rules, throwing them out and starting again. I think with the way that things have gone over the last 18 months, coming up to 2 years now, and probably longer than that, I think COVID has just highlighted a lot of the problems in recruitment. And I figured that out when I was a candidate this time last year and I was on the other side of the interview table. And I kind of figured out, God, is this how candidates feel? And I was kind of noticing a lot of, not mistakes, and I think companies do the best that they can, but that's how the idea was born, was through my own experience. It didn't just come to me. It wasn't just, you know, I'll be honest, it wasn't like a deep burning passion of mine. It actually came from my own experience as a candidate only, you know, a year ago. So that's pretty much what I do. You know, I'm kind of taking all my experiences, my knowledge, my technical expertise, bundling them together and helping companies, you know, just a simple, slick process, you know, take out all the frills and just give candidates an amazing experience and give recruiters a good experience as well.
Very, very important work, Tak. Much needed. I'm going to go really deep with you on all that. I'm looking forward to it. Before we do so, I just want to come back to this starting in law and then falling into recruitment. As somebody who started in accountancy for a few years before falling into recruitment myself, I'm always interested in people's journeys. So tell me about that. Like, why law initially and then why the pivot?
So why law initially? I honestly couldn't tell you. I think that, you know, I'm an 80s baby, and back in those days, you know, when your kids were learning, like, what do you want to do with your life? It was, you know, we didn't have things like careers advice. We didn't get the services that we have now, you know, like careers advice, guidance and stuff like that. It wasn't like, oh, you could do apprenticeships and internships. There wasn't anything like that. It was very much, you do work experience in year 9, you do your mocks in year 10, your GCSEs in year 11. And by, you know, by the age of 15, 16, you have to have figured out what you want to do. It was crazy. And in them days, there wasn't really that much, like I say, awareness as to what other opportunities there were. So it's very much doctor, lawyer or accountant. Well, you were one of them and I was the other. So I picked law because I was always interested in that. And I still am. You know, I love, you know, crime, and, you know, crime documentaries are absolutely my thing. So anything to do with crime, anything to do with law, it was, you know, I was interested in it. And so my college were doing that. So I took up the course and I kind of just stuck with it. It wasn't ever a conscious thing. I think I did it in sixth form. And then I naturally went in and did I got my law degree, went to uni, got my law degree. And then without even thinking, just signed on to do the LPC. Again, there was no major rhyme or reason behind it. It wasn't like, oh, I was, you know, had this deep burning passion for it. I just fell into it. I did enjoy it though. I love the legal industry and I love, you know, learning about different laws and the evolution of the legal system and stuff like that and kind of taking it apart and understanding it. So I then, we were kind of in the recession period in the, you know, in the kind of mid to late 2000s. It was very difficult to get a job at that point. And I didn't have any experience. I was just a hardcore academic. I've worked since I was 16, but just like the odd, you know, the odd job here and there. So I didn't have the experience to pick and choose what I wanted to do. I fell into personal injury, I never wanted to do personal injury. It was the one thing that I never, ever wanted to do, but there were no other jobs. So I took the first thing that I needed and thought, you know what, I'm going to build my experience. And I loved it. You know, I started from the very bottom and I worked my way up the ladder. And I eventually became a litigation executive. I was handling my own caseload and I'd been there for like 8 years, you know, great firm in Trafford in Manchester. But then, you know, the rules were changing, the law was changing. I thought, God, I am now like hitting 30, 31. This is all you've ever done. You've never done anything else. You've no idea what other capabilities you have. And I remember having a particularly bad day at work and I just handed in my notice. Did my CV one night. There was no, I'm either an overthinker or totally impulsive and spontaneous. So I did my CV one night and I think I'd reached my limit. It wasn't like a knee-jerk reaction. I thought there's nowhere else for me to go. This is all I can ever do. If I move to another firm, I'm going to do the same job. I just want to do something different. I want to know what else there is to me. So I did my CV, put it out one day, the next morning, went in, handed in my resignation. And the very first phone call that I got was from a small boutique recruitment agency, tech recruitment agency in Altrincham. And we got on like an absolute house on fire. Recruitment, it wasn't like, this is what I want to go into. I wasn't opposed to it. I was really open-minded because I had no real hardcore plan. So I took the phone call and we spoke on the phone for about an hour or two, just kind of just chatting and getting to know each other. And we got on really well and I met more of the guys. It was a really small firm. There was only three people. So I went in, I met them face to face and the rest is history. So they say, so total accident, how I got into recruitment. Getting into law was probably more down to the fact that in them days, there wasn't a great deal of focus or there wasn't a spotlight on doing anything else, especially for women and especially for Asian women. So coming from the community that I come from, there wasn't a lot of knowledge or education. There was a serious lack of knowledge and education around all of the things that women can do as employment or careers. So things like wanting to be a beautician, that was not a thing. That was not a real thing. I always thought, yeah, I love doing hair and makeup and nails and stuff like that. I was a real girly girl, but that was just not an option. So I bring up the culture thing because in the 80s and 90s, there was a lack of education, a lack of awareness in the Asian community as to what women especially can do for a career for the rest of their life. And like I say, there was always an option of you can be a doctor, you can be a lawyer, or you can be an accountant. Anything else was just not on the radar. So that's kind of how I kind of got shoehorned into that. I was never forced into it, but I was kind of shoehorned into that and I was interested in it. So, you know, that always helped. But, you know, I do think it's really important for, only now do I realize, you know, got to the age of 30, 31, having never done anything else. And there's so many people like that. But for me, I wanted to do something different. So you could say that I'd got my degree, I'd learned the ropes. I don't think it's wasted, but it's definitely had a big hand in getting me to where I am right now in recruitment. So it definitely gave me a lot of grounding and gave me the foundation of what I needed to be a good recruiter, you know, empathy, dealing with people, different characters, being approachable, personable, all of that good stuff. So yeah, that's long.
Love it.
long-winded way of around of getting around it, but that's pretty much my journey and how I got into law, how I got into recruitment and that kind of transition.
Yeah, it definitely was a failing of a system in terms of the lack of options, for sure. And yeah, I think as well, a lot of young people then and still now, like for me personally, getting into finance, it was about almost doing what my parents wanted me to do rather than actually aligning who I was with a career that interested me. It was just kind of for approval as much as anything. But it's quite a bold move though, because I was about 3.5, 4 years. You were 8 years into this. And in the eyes of society at that point, very much a big success, right? So where did you get that courage from to just go, do you know what? Bang. I know you say you're impulsive, but there's impulsive and then there's impulsive, right? It's a bit cool.
It didn't go down well with some people.
Well, it wouldn't.
Was like, what are you thinking? Like, obviously, being a lawyer comes with a certain level of, what do you want to call
recognition,
it?
Recognition, respect.
Recognition, that's the word, yeah. And he was incredibly proud. My grandparents were incredibly proud of the fact that, you know, our girl's a lawyer. And I was like, look, I understand that, but I don't want to do it anymore. You know, I've done it since I was a kid. I've done it since I was 15, 16 years old. This is all I've ever done. And it's not, they considered it to be a waste. They considered your education now is a waste, which I disagree with. I think that if you are the educating type, if you're the academic type, no education is ever going to be a waste. I think that every piece of academic, whether you go the whole hog and go all the way to law school or continue studying into your 50s, 60s, it's never going to be a waste. Whether you do an internship at a certain age, it's never going to be a waste. But I think that for me, what gave me the push to do it is the fact that I wasn't really feeling it anymore, that I don't know how else to say it. I didn't have the passion anymore. I didn't feel like I had a great deal of support because the legal rules had changed and everything. And it was very much about focusing on work and bringing in money and billable hours. And I just felt like I was in this machine of making it work and going through the motions. And I could do the job with my eyes closed. And I think when you get to the point of complacency where you can do something with your eyes closed and you don't even have to try anymore, that is your time to think whether or not this is for you still, whether or not
I love that.
This is going to stretch you. Is it going to challenge you? Is this all there is to you? But if you can come in like boredom, we could even say that it's down to boredom. And that's just not me. Once I get bored, I switch off. And once I switch off, you've lost me for good. So, and that's pretty much what it was. I think it was a little bit of a lack of support. So we'd gone through a merger and the firm that I was working for had merged with a much smaller firm. Rules had changed, environment had changed, culture had changed. Everything I was familiar with, everything that I loved about working for that particular firm had changed. And then on top of that, like I say, if you know how to do something with your eyes closed and you don't have to push yourself, you don't have to think, you don't have to engage your brain, what are you doing? Like, it is time for you to really rethink. And the reason why I didn't go from that job to simply the same job in a different firm is purely because I thought it was pointless. What would be the point? Like, if you've lost the passion for the job, there is absolutely no point in taking a sidestep. You're probably going to take a hit on salary, but to just simply do this job somewhere else is not going to drive me. I need to be buzzed. I need to be interested. I need to be engaged. Because like I say, I do get bored very quickly. I will admit that. So I've never thought of it as a courageous thing. I've never thought of it as a gutsy move. I just thought it was something I needed to do. It was a decision I needed to make. I was in my early 30s. I'm driving my own career and I can either stay put and be, you know, complacent, not unhappy. I don't recall being unhappy, but just being bored. I can either stay put and be bored. And this is all it was ever going to be. You know, I was never going to be the managing partner of the firm because the if you looked at the board of directors, it was very clear that somebody like me with a face like mine was never going to make that. It was also never really a dream of mine to be a managing partner. So when you don't have, you know, those dreams and those goals to be much more in a place like that, there's nothing really more to stick about for. And that's kind of where the move came from. And like I say, you know, a little bit of impulse, a little bit of spontaneity, you could call it, you know, guts. And I just made that move and I resigned and I decided to leave the industry altogether for good.
Amazing.
That's pretty much it.
Well, that's brilliant. Thanks for sharing that so openly. And as I say, whilst it might not have felt courageous to you, I actually think that was a really brave move at the time.
Hey, everybody, it's Andrew here. Just wanted to very briefly interrupt this podcast episode to tell you a little bit more about our Career Jump Club. So our Career Jump Club was created to help job seekers understand what they want and how to get it, right? So becoming a club member is a great move if you're looking to get the clarity and confidence in order to secure your next role. With the membership, you get a number of different things. So first thing you get is access to our online platform, which has over 30 videos, 40, 50 different templates, workbooks, and it takes you through everything from sort of understanding what you want to how to position your CV and LinkedIn, how to interview, how to close offers and negotiate better salaries, a full end-to-end job search course effectively for senior leaders. So you get that, you get a fortnightly group coaching call, which is with me and with the other members where we bounce around best practice, share slide decks, share techniques, and share the latest data on what's working for people. And you get to, most importantly, become part of our closed LinkedIn group and our closed community. And in there is where the magic often happens because you get people referring each other into opportunity, supporting each other, and just sharing. And that's what it's all about. So if you're financially able and you'd like to invest in your job search, head on over to www.execcareerjump.com, all one word, /club, and you'll find the landing page and come and give it a go. We'll see you in there. Anyway, back to the pod.
So let's switch lanes a little bit and talk about recruitment and hiring. I guess my question for you as a recruitment strategy expert is, what I see are companies who say that there's a talent shortage, that talent's their biggest problem, that recruitment's their biggest issue, yes, on one hand.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, I work with lots of very talented people who can't find the job that they're looking for. So yeah, I would describe that as broken, right? Yeah. For that to be the status quo that everybody's operating within. I guess my question is, why is it broken and what the hell can we do about it, Tack?
So here's my thing. I think there is a deficit, okay? I think that there is a major deficit and there is a black hole between the world of candidates and the world of employment, okay? And I think there is something where all of the good stuff is falling in the middle and it's just falling into some black hole where employers think, oh, you know, we really need these really amazing people and we just can't find them. And, you know, we're sat here with all these empty seats in the office. And then you've got candidates who are crying out for jobs. I've been a candidate only a year ago. Okay. And look, I'm not saying that I am the best candidate out there. I'm not saying that I have the, you know, I'm number one. Just because I have my own business, I'm still a candidate. I'm still up against amazing other people. But what I was noticing is the process in which you were assessing me as a candidate. So I'm just going off my own experience now. The process in which I was being assessed, the way that I'd been recruited, first of all. So when you start from the very beginning and you work your way through the process and you see the stages at which employers are trying to attract the talent, they're trying to hire the talent and then keep them. All of these things combined is what makes up your process, right? And where employers think that we can't find the candidates, and I put a post out a very, very long time ago, and I think it did rub people up the wrong way, employers up the wrong way, but it is just the harsh truth. You're not attracting talent because you're not attractive. And I don't mean to sound abrupt, but that is the harsh reality. Candidates, especially with the way that things have gone in the last 18 months, and I'm saying this is going on longer than COVID, but COVID particularly if there's one good thing that it's taught us is priorities and what's important to us. And I think candidates are very aware of what their worth is, what their values are, their priorities, what their passions are, and they're not willing to negotiate a great deal on those. But then when they're going out to apply for jobs, employers haven't moved on. So the candidates have evolved. in terms of what they're looking for, but employers are still stuck in pre-pandemic ways of hiring. They've not evolved with the candidates. So they're still looking for people who want 9 to 5. I've seen it myself even now when I'm working with clients now. They want people in the office for, you know, 9 hours a day. They want people who are going to commit to starting early and finishing late. They want people who are going to commit to, and there's not a great deal of benefits. You know, people talk about these benefits like, oh, we have an amazing pool table and we have neon signs everywhere and we have plants and bean bags. Nobody cares about that when they've got a little kid at home whose sports day they're now going to have to start missing, which they didn't have to miss for the last 12 months. So when you're trying to attract talent, companies need to start thinking about how they are attracting talent. How are you truly trying to tap into the talent that is out there? Because they are out there. I refuse to believe that there is no talent out there. I just don't buy it. I think there are tons and tons and tons of people who have got an amazing skill set that may not quite be where you want it to be, but you can invest in them and you can build them up and you can train them up and you can show them the skills that they need to be the type of candidate that your business needs ultimately. So I don't believe that there's no talent out there. I believe that the problem, and this could be loaded and now may not be popular for it, but I think the main problem lies with the attraction strategy that employers have. I'm not saying that candidates don't bring problems of their own, but I think in the main, what my observations are is that candidates have evolved, but the recruitment strategy, the talent process, the way in which employers are trying to get these guys hasn't evolved. So this is no longer speaking to this, and this guy is no longer speaking to this guy. So that is where I believe the deficit comes from, the breakdown in communication, the breakdown in connection, because they're not really speaking the same language. What I will say is there are some companies who have evolved. There are some companies who have absolutely got it right. They've taken a good look at themselves and they've changed their processes. They've changed their strategies, whether it's mental health, well-being, working from home, work-life balance, all of these amazing things. They've really looked, they've taken the time out of the pandemic period to really look at how they can improve their offering to the candidates, whether it's current employees or potential new candidates. And they've really taken the opportunity to build themselves as an improved employer or a more attractive employer. Whereas there are a lot of other companies, and I speak to them all the time, this is the way we've always done it. We don't have time. We don't have the budget. We just need bums on seats. All of these things are bad habits. And until they don't knock these bad habits on the head, you're going to have a talent shortage. So whilst a lot of people say, and I see it all the time, there is a talent shortage, there's a skill shortage, I want to know, okay, if you think there's a skill shortage, my first question would be, okay, what have you done to level up? What have you done to improve your game? That would be my first question. And if they can tell me we've done this, and we still think there's a skill shortage, then I would do a bit more of a deep dive. But that would be my first question, is what have you done to level up?
I love that visual of the two parties on either side of this pit and the kind of rope bridge being broken in the middle. And so they're never getting to meet each other.
It's not joined up.
You mentioned some companies have evolved. One of the other things that I'm interested to talk to you about that I'm seeing as well, though, is even some of the ones that have evolved, they've evolved their employer brand, but not their culture. And so what they're doing is they're going out and telling the market what the market wants to hear to attract people in. But the reality, once you get in the organization, is that it's almost like greenwashing. Do you know what I mean? Like they're portraying a message to attract people in that doesn't then actually come to life once you're in the organization.
Yeah, so absolutely. I mean, it's misrepresentation. That's what it is. You know, and I it's something that I see, and it's very much, it's something else that I've talked about before, where companies are talking the talk, but they're just not walking the walk. And it's all amazing. And I'll give you examples, things like diversity and inclusion, hot topic. Okay. Things like, one thing that COVID produced, and I'm going to be honest, I don't like it. I'm not a fan of it, is the BAME community. I'm not a fan of that term. I've got my own issues with that. But it was produced in the COVID period, and things like diversity and inclusion, it's a hot topic. Everybody needs to pay attention. Everybody needs to sit up and listen. Everybody needs to learn. And a lot of companies are saying, yeah, we're all about it. We're all about diversity, and they talk about it, and they put posts out, and they put posters out, and it's really nice and colourful. Pride. Pride's another example. Everybody's got flags, everybody's celebrating Pride Month and all of this. And the minute we go into the new month, everything comes down and nobody's talking about it anymore. That's it. And it's just a very momentary thing. And I think that for people from those communities, whether it's the BAME community, whether it's any minority group, those people feel let down. So when they buy into this, we're all for it, diversity and inclusion, pride, BAME, female empowerment, all of the, you know, leadership and all of this stuff. And then you get in there and you find that actually this is not quite what you told. That's not quite what you've been advertising. And I've seen it. I've worked for companies that are like that, where they talk about all these amazing things and they buy into it. Candidates buy into it. Current employees buy into it. But what you don't see, I call it drinking the Kool-Aid, where you buy into it and you leave, you know, your current role and you join this company because they've got an amazing vision and they've got really, you know, they're really forward thinking. And then you get in there and you think, actually, you're not actually doing anything. You're just talking about it. I think that the problem with that, though, is the uncomfortable truth. I think a lot of these topics where people need to share, especially when it comes to culture, and culture is a big bugbear of mine, because a lot of people think that culture is, first of all, we need to talk about what culture actually is. It's not having fun. It's not having a PlayStation in the corner. It's not your pool table and your beanbag. That's not what culture is. It's very, very 2010. The culture that we now are all looking for is support, a healthy work environment, work-life balance, you know, encouragement, opportunity, development, all of this good stuff. You know, just a healthy working environment where we can all be ourselves and we don't have to hold back and we're all accepted, okay? We're all accepted as equals. That's all we want, right? We all just want to be in a workplace where we come in, we're happy, we do our jobs and we go home. And a lot of companies, you will see on every job description, at least one mention of things like culture, things like support, guidance, and all of that good stuff. The thing with culture is you're talking about a bunch of people, and people are all different inherently. How can you control a bunch of people to all believe in the same thing? That, to me, comes from your leadership. That comes from the top down. That comes from the example that is there before you even join. So when it comes to things like what companies are advertising and what they're selling and what candidates are buying into, that comes from inside the company. But coming back to why that misrepresentation is there, I believe that some of the problem is discussing uncomfortable truths, things like discrimination, prejudice, bias, things like diversity and inclusion. Like, how do we get to the bottom of it? I think people are afraid of talking about it inside the businesses. When I look at people that I've worked with in the past, when I look at clients that I'm working with at the moment, they're all white, they're all middle-aged, mostly men, and they're afraid, like, how do we even open this subject? Because a lot of it is looking at yourself. A lot of it is looking at yourself and what you have allowed to be created in your environment, what you have perpetuated in your environment. So what you're looking at right now, you might not like it, but this is your doing. So a lot of it is checking yourself, and people are afraid of where that might take them. My thing is who cares? Just address it. Like, we're all over it. We're all past caring about why it exists. We just want to know how we can move on from it. Like, I don't care that you've allowed it to happen, but I don't care. I don't care that it's there more than I care that you want to fix it. I care that you want to fix it. I care that you want to change it. But I think people are afraid of digging deep on these really, like, heated issues, because it can become heated issues. And they had difficult debates and the difficult conversations. And I think generally, that's my take. That's what I've observed, is people are afraid to dig too deep. And I see it. I see it when I post content. And so when I post content about, you know, female empowerment or women's rights or treating women with respect, you generally see a lot of people will like it, but then the comments will only be from women, because men are probably afraid of telling us their truth because they don't want to get piled on. And then when you talk about racism, you know, I talk about racism quite a lot. I've struggled in the past because I don't want to ruffle feathers, but I'm now finding my voice because I think it's a big problem, and it's a problem that I'm willing to address. I'm willing to say, look, if you won't bring it to the table, I'll bring it to the table, so long as you engage in a conversation with me about it. And when I do that, I can see people holding back. I can see people holding back in their comments. I can see, and it's not because they don't have an opinion. Everybody has an opinion. I think people are afraid of how to word and how to frame their opinion because they're afraid, right? They're afraid of, you know, the political correctness of it all.
100%. That's exactly how I feel.
Yeah.
It's exactly how I feel, because I want to learn and I want to get behind. I think what's going on at the moment is really progressive. And I love the fact that COVID acts as like a circuit breaker in many ways. And I think we've got to take as much advantage of the current momentum behind these issues as possible, which is why I'm really excited to be involved with the Changemaker campaign, because meeting those people and the missions that they're after is really humbling and educational for somebody like me who is from privilege, right? Yeah. But I'm also super worried about getting it wrong, Tack. Like,
exactly.
That's what holds me back from taking more of a leading position. And I also think that it's hard to, and we don't make enough effort to understand things that we haven't experienced personally. Mm-hmm. And so it's only through talking to people and seeing things yourself that you then start to uncover these things. But we've got to get to a place where people are more curious to go and find out about it rather than denying the existence of it. So I can give you a great example on the, you know, the different treatment between males and females, right? Yeah. So for me, it was kind of like, well, I don't really see that happening. I then start working with Amelia, who a lot of the listeners will know, Amelia Sordell. We work very closely together on her personal branding business. And we both post a lot on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And because of that, I started seeing some of the messages she was getting, whenever she celebrated her success, some of the pushback she was getting, typically mm-hmm. from guys who look like me, maybe slightly older. Mm-hmm. And she was getting messages and responses to things that I never experienced myself. So we're both posting loads. We've both got big followings. We're both getting a lot of views. But the response she was getting to her celebrating her success was totally different to mine.
Yeah.
And I was like, geez. Like, and she's like, but it's always, she's like, if you think that's bad, you should see my DMs. And I was like, wow, it was such an eye opener for me, who's just in my own little bubble and just had never had any data to understand some of the things that are under the surface.
Absolutely. And I think that is what you've just said there is absolutely the pinnacle of the problem, where people either, you've got the small group of people, and I do think it's a small group of people who just want to push back on issues, you know. Yeah. I put stuff out about racism and sexism and stuff like that. Not a whole lot, because I have a lot more to talk about. There's a lot more to me than just being an Asian woman, right? So I don't just want to talk about that. I want to talk about a whole load of issues. But that is one of the things that is important to me, because I've had experiences that I have pushed down for many, many years because I don't want to rock the boat. I'm now knocking on 40 years old. Like, I just don't care about rocking the boat anymore. Do you know what I mean? And I want to be an influence to people, women around me. I want to be a positive. I want to use my voice for good. I don't just want to use my voice for recruitment and my business and, you know, what biscuits I eat. No, I want to use my voice for something that is going to make a change or some kind of positivity, even if it's a small change. But I do think that the problem lies in people's hesitation and people's fear for getting it wrong. And I can completely understand that. I completely understand it, which is why when I put posts out about controversial subjects, if that's what we want to call them, when I do put posts out and people do give me pushback or challenges, I don't get it a lot. I don't know why. I've never had a nasty DM. I've never had anything. I've never had anybody be racist online. Then again, I've not been doing it for very long. And it's not because I've not written strong material. I mean, I have, but I don't know, maybe it's to come. I have had people push back though. I have had people push back, question me. I've had people say that I am jumping on the back of issues just to up my views and engagement. I'm like, okay, fine. I don't get rattled easily. So I will engage with them and I will, you know, there's some people who I've educated, you know, they've put forward an opinion, which I just think you're not thinking. But instead of pushing back and saying, you know, see, you don't understand, I will engage with them. And my intention is for them to leave that conversation having learned something or slightly change their perspective or their opinion, even just a little bit, or just make them think, right? Just provoke them into thinking, because that's the only way that we're going to do it. I can't throw somebody into the deep end. I can't force somebody into looking at themselves or to look at the situation or pick up a book or read something or watch something to learn about the disparity that there is in society, whether it's between men and women, whether it's, you know, the ethnic minorities, whether it's minority groups, whatever it is, you can't force people. All we can do is invite people to engage in conversations and make them feel safe that even if you get it wrong, that's okay. I just want you to try. I will be right here if you get it wrong, and I'm going to be cheering you on because you're trying. So that's what that's the space that I want to create for people, is I'm going to be here if you get it wrong. I'm still going to be here if you get it right. So, you know, either way, I just want you to try. That's all.
That's awesome. Yeah, well, keep doing that, because I think that's really, really, really important. And the more people like yourself that are sharing their experiences and keeping that voice out there, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Because I agree. I think the vast majority of people have the right intent. There's always going to be morons, unfortunately. That's just
internet.
It's the internet. Yeah,
interesting as well. You know, gives you a bit of a giggle every now and then. But I think it's important that we keep trying. I think that's my main thing. As long as the majority of us is trying, that's all we can ask for. It's more than what we've ever had. And like you say, it's progressive. That's good for me.
Exciting. Yeah, it's exciting. Right. I'm wary of time, but I want to get into some quick fire stuff with you. Finish the episode. I wasn't expecting us to talk about that topic in as much depth, but it's just super interesting. So I'm glad that we did. So first question, top three tips for LinkedIn.
Oh, top three tips for LinkedIn. I'm going to say, don't let anybody or anything stop you from posting what you want to post. Okay.
Love
so
that.
Just go for it. Don't overthink it. Just go for it. Don't be disheartened if you don't rock everybody's world. Okay. You're not going to, it's impossible. There's 7 billion of us. It's just never going to happen. Keep going. And the third thing I would say is, show yourself. Don't make it all about work. LinkedIn is not all about work. LinkedIn personal branding is supposed to be personal. It's supposed to be about you. So get personal. That's what people want to know. So my advice across the board would be go for it. But yeah, definitely, you know, be yourself, be personal. Don't jump on the back of other people's content. Don't overthink it. Just get on with it and don't give up. Don't ever give up.
Fantastic. Very sage advice there. And top three things people are getting wrong in their recruitment process.
not allowing your process, not thinking that your process needs to evolve. So your process has to be evolutionary. If your process hasn't changed in X amount of time, whether it's 6 months, 12 months or whatever, therein lies a problem. That's the first thing. So your process has to be evolutionary. The second thing is, if you have used the expression, this is how we've always done it, therein lies your second problem. Okay. You should never always do it. And that ties in with the first one. Okay. So being evolutionary, moving on. The third thing I'm going to say is, listen to the people. Your people are your best references, whether they are the candidates in the market or the people that you already employ. Your people are your best references. Do a survey, speak to them, anonymize it, create, you know, thinking groups, create, you know, lunches or whatever. Give your people a safe space to tell you what you're doing really well and what you're not doing really well, and take their advice. Your people are your best references.
Love that. Excellent. It's been awesome. Where can people find you, connect with you, follow up with you if they want to get involved on the content side or to improve their own recruitment strategy? How do they get in touch with TAC?
Yeah, so I am on LinkedIn. So you can find me on LinkedIn under TAC Shah. And I've got a little blue love heart and a little yellow love heart. Feel free to get in touch with me, DM me. I've got content out pretty much every day. There's a mixed bag there of recruitment hints and tips and my personal stuff. So I give people, somebody said yesterday, I give them a little window into my little life. So there's a little mixed bag of information there. So you can get me on LinkedIn, and obviously there's my website. So centricconsultancy.co.uk tells you a little bit about what we do as a business, all the services and offerings that we have. And that's, you know, you can find me on Instagram, but that's not really that interesting at all.
No worries. Well, make sure you check out that website and definitely connect or follow Tack on LinkedIn if you're not already, because that's where we met and she shared some really interesting opinions. So thanks so much again for giving up your time to come and share with our listeners.
Thank you so much.
See you soon.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Career Jump podcast with Andrew McCaskill. For more resources and information, just head over to the Career Jump website at www.execcareerjump.com to supercharge your job search and start making moves. Let's get to work.